You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
It's the first episode of the Fenway Rundown for this week. I'm Sean McAdam. Welcome. My co-host Chris Cotillo sidelined for a bit. He'll be back soon. We're thrilled to have as our guest today, Lou Merlone, former Red Sox infielder, former major leaguer. You see him on NESN. You hear him on EEI. He'll talk about the Lucas Giolito news and everything else that's going on with the Red Sox. But we want to remind you about our Red Sox Insider Text program, where you can text me, Chris Cotillo, and Chris Smith, get all the updates, get all the news first, and be able to go back and forth, ask us questions, and supply questions for this podcast. To do that, all you need to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257. Then click the link. You get a 14-day trial period that is free. After that, it's $4.99 a month. We think you'll enjoy it. And now, Lou Merlone. First episode of the Fenway Rundown for this week. I'm Sean McAdam. My usual co-host and partner, Chris Cotillo, is recovering from some minor surgery. He's unavailable, but recovering well. But we are pleased to be joined today by Lou Merlone, former Red Sox infielder, former major leaguer, current NESN and WEEI analyst, and of course, the pride of both Framingham and our shared alma mater, Providence College. Lou, thanks for joining us.
Oh, anytime, Sean. It's always good to talk Sox, especially on a day like today, right?
Yeah, just a real happy day around Red Sox Nation. Not hardly, of course. And by now, everybody has heard the news about Lucas Giolito, whom the Red Sox had counted on to play a significant role here. He was really the only major league free agent of note that they signed over the winter. You subtract Chris Sale, you bring in Lucas Giolito and think, well, at least, you know, you've replaced Sale's experience and maybe even topped his innings. But with the news today that there is a significant elbow injury that could well lead to Tommy John surgery, it's unlikely that Giolito will pitch in 2024. And that is a crushing blow for a team that already had a lot of questions about its pitching staff.
Yeah, I didn't think the injury to Lucas Giolito was going to send me into a tailspin, but it kind of has because of the ripple effects. You know, let's face it, it was kind of like a reclamation project anyways, right? So I don't know what the quality inning, what the ERA was going to be, but we were banking on those innings on a staff that desperately needed it, banking on 175, 180 innings on a team that needs it, you know, and with him gone, it's the ripple effect. First off, he's got the player option next year of $19 million. So now you just spend $37 million in 2 years on a pitcher that you may never see. You may get him next year for a month. But it also now puts Whitlock and Houck probably in this rotation, maybe Winkowski. So you just weakened your bullpen, right? Like the bullpen that we thought was loaded. Ideally, I would have loved to have had Houck and Whitlock out there and keep Winkowski down at AAA starter depth. I don't know if you can do all of that. You know, I just start thinking about the starters you have in this organization trying to get through 6 months. We lived it last year, right? A three-man rotation or three-and-a-half-man rotation. And right now you're kind of worried because a lot of guys really haven't proven themselves yet.
Yeah, and you also worry about what does this do to a guy like Bayo, who everyone expects has that high ceiling and projects like he could eventually be a number one, or at the very least, a very good number two. But you worry, does this put a little bit too much on his shoulders too soon? He's only made 39 starts at the big league level. He's been inconsistent, as young pitchers often are. That development is not always linear. We know that. And you worry, does he now try to do too much? Does he try to say to himself, now I have to be the number one guy before he's ready to assume that kind of workload and responsibility?
Yeah,
that domino effect that you talked about.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting on the biggest issue for this team in general. Like, the entire roster is like they lack those anchors, you know, stars, whatever you want to call them. Like, they lack those givens. Nothing is a given. I get it. I mean, look at Giolito. Guy's never had arm problems his whole life, and here he is, probably going to have Tommy John. So even though nothing's a given, you still need those anchors. Like, Bayo should not be considered the one or two this year, right? He should be 3-4 in that area and just go out and pitch and let your John Lester, John Lackey take care of the top, right? Let your Pedro Schilling take care of the top. Let your Beckett and whoever it was back then, Lester, take care of the top of the rotation, and you just settle in. And it's really the same way with this lineup. You know, Casas should not be relied on. Like you said, Duran, we don't know what's going on, but you're relying on him. You know, you're looking at Willy Abreu, and you're sitting there like, you need offense from this guy. Like, you don't have those anchors to just let your young kids sort of grow up in the background. And when, because everybody keeps talking about, we need all these guys to perform. Everybody needs to step up. Well, it's a real mistake when you start expecting or needing everyone to just be better. Like, that's one of the biggest mistakes you make in any sport, just to think because it's a new year, everyone's going to be better. It's just not the case in sports. Some guys will take the next step. Some will plateau. Some will have bad years or get hurt. And it seems like for this team to survive, everyone has to take a step forward. And it's really not fair to not just Bayo, but even Cutter Crawford, you know, or Whitlock and Hauk. You got two guys that are trying to see if they can be starters in this league. Same with Winkowski. So the unknown, there's a ton of it, you know, on this team. And you just lack those anchors, those stars. Like, every lineup should have three anchors, like two starting pitchers, three anchors in the back end of the bullpen. And then in order to be good, the other players, if they do take the step, now you're a great baseball team, right? Like, you look at the Yankees, they have Soto and Judge, which is awesome, and they're going to be a good lineup. But they'll only be really good if everyone else is good, right? Rizzo, LeMahieu, Gleyber, Verdugo. Like, it's a, you got your anchors, but now you need everybody else to step up. Red Sox are asking their young guys to step up and be those anchors, and that's tough.
Yeah, and, you know, as you point out, Lou, if you need six things to all go right, you're probably not going to get even four of them. You know, right. You might get three answered, maybe four works out for you, but it's unlikely you're going to go 6-for-6 if you have all that uncertainty. And that's where they find themselves now, where you have, let's assume that the three guys we think are in the rotation now would be Bayo, Crawford, and Pivetta. And then you've got two, if not three spots. There's been some talk about a six man already today. We'll get that in a little bit. But now you've got, you know, instead of Winkowski going back and either being the seventh inning guy in the bullpen, or even getting stretched out in Worcester, now you need him to be plugged in, yeah. Or you need both Hauk and Whitlock in the rotation, and you take that multi-inning relief option off the table because they're needed to provide 4, 5, 6 innings as a starter. I don't think you want to go through the year with all those openers the way they did a year ago. But you wonder if they're not asking a lot of these guys to do too much too soon.
Yeah, and listen, we were down there with me, and other than the Giolito injury today, like, we all liked what we were seeing. You know, everybody was raving about all these guys. But the reality is they're not going to be able to prove. All these guys is what they need to prove. They're not going to be able to do it in spring training. Like, you shouldn't be surprised that Tanner Houck was outstanding for 2 or 3 innings, you know, his first two outings. He's been outstanding his whole career for 3 innings. Right? Like, you shouldn't be surprised that Cutter Crawford looked really good, you know, when he got to about 55 pitches, you know, after 3 innings and called it a day, or 50 pitches. Like, his issue is pitches 70 to 85, right? Keeping that stuff up, like going deeper in the game. Will we find that out in camp? I don't know. Like, if he gets 6 innings, will they still be big leaguers hitting against him?
Well, that's just it. In Grapefruit League or any spring training games, you know, particularly when you're home and the other team has brought a bunch of minor leaguers, you got double A kids coming up after the first two at bats, and you know, it's hard to take too much good or bad from what you're seeing, because this isn't who he's going to be facing in a month.
Yeah, that's why the road games are fun. You know, not that I like traveling, but you get to see their A squad. So the starting pitcher go against the A squad. Guys like Rafaela and getting at bats against big league pitchers. But, you know, and again, Tanner Houck, I think he looks really good. Velocity is up. He came in innings, what, 4-6 behind Bale the other day at home against Washington, who took two bench guys, the three bench guys, and eight AAA guys. And by the time Tanner came in, I don't even know if he just dominated AA guys. He looks good. And same thing with Witt. You know, he's throwing home games, but it's the road games when you face the A lineups, and you probably only face them twice. So Maybe you start facing them three times, which is really the question for all these guys. Winkowski, can his stuff last for 5 or 6 innings? Can he go 150 innings? We're not going to find that out in camp. So we judge spring training based on what we see. They really see the numbers, and really they're still going to have to go on to what they see and what they project and what they think, because they might not get some of those answers either. They may be forced to do it now, though, right? So
right. And one of the names that got brought up already today from Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow is the possibility that, and I think a lot of diehard Red Sox fans would fail this trivia question, who was the other major league free agent signed by the Red Sox other than Lucas Giolito? Do you know the answer to this?
That would be the your sixth starter, I believe, Cooper Criswell.
Cooper Criswell was the only other major league free agent signed over the winter, and now suddenly a guy without much of a track record at the big league level is competing for a back end spot now, because again, the domino effect and opening up and moving guys into the rotation. Criswell's got a live arm. The stuff looks pretty good, but we know next to nothing about his ability to get major league hitters out as a starter.
It just goes into the whole offseason, really, right? Like, we need starting pitching, and now you didn't add anything with Giolito going down. And nobody would have seen that coming, okay, because he has been healthy. But this is why we kept talking about, like, the Montgomerys and adding more guys and everything else, and because you need the stockpile starting pitching so your bullpen can be electric. Right. And so that's your pitching staff. And instead, they bring in Giolito, and it's like, kind of thin. Thought it was going to be two starters like that. The minute the offseason started, Sean, didn't everybody tell us they need two?
At minimum.
Yeah. And they didn't. And, which brings up, I know Montgomery is still out there. I don't know how you feel about it, but like, to me, it's like now I feel like, they should be locking him up for 5 years because they need it in the future. But if John Henry didn't believe enough in this team to spend money, and invest, which I think is really kind of the unspoken truth, is that he just doesn't believe in this team.
Yeah.
Or he spent. With this guy going down, what makes you think he's going to go out and spend now?
Right. It's almost counterintuitive, but I agree completely with you on Montgomery. And I'm talking to someone who uses Jordan Montgomery's picture in his X or Twitter avatar. You've been vocal in your support for him, but I think on social media today, it's like, well, now they really have to sign Montgomery, and you got to tell people it's the exact opposite, that maybe there was a 10% chance they were going to sign him yesterday. I'd say that's below 5% now because of the scenario you just sketched out. Because I think the reason he's not here is because John Henry thought this one guy is not going to make a difference in 2024. And you can argue that that's probably the case. But now they're not as good as they were 24 hours ago. So if he wasn't good enough to add to the roster yesterday, or if he wasn't going to make a difference being added to the roster yesterday, he's even less of a fit now because the team is worse than it was 24 hours ago. Given the Giolito situation.
Yeah, and I just sort of look at, like, so when do we start winning again? When do everyone's wondering that, right? When do we start acting like the Sox again? And what concerns me is that next year you get $19 million tied up in a pitcher you won't see. I think if somehow that option, he was here next year and he was throwing the ball well, or at least useful, because he gave you 170 innings, the Red Sox might be like, okay, we got a starting pitcher. Now they got to still replace that, even though they're still paying this guy 19. Now I worrying about next offseason and saying, well, we got to wait till Giolito's money comes off the books before we can kind of go in.
It's easy to sort of kick that can down the road forever. We have to wait. We have to wait. We have to wait until more money's off the books or the young guys get better or prove themselves worthy of a spot. But with less talent surrounding them, that's harder and harder to do. So we've talked a lot about the pitching staff, which is obviously a trouble spot. It was yesterday. It's doubly so today. What about the rest of the team? Let's talk about the position players. Let's try to separate it from the pitching. Is this lineup good enough as it's currently constituted to at least make this team, you know, a little bit competitive? Let's say in a best case scenario, some of those guys emerge. Hauk and Whitlock find themselves. They win 10 or 12 games. They give them 150 plus innings, and the rotation is better than advertised. What about the lineup? Because I think there's some questions there too.
Yeah, the questions there are, but I think as we've seen, you know, I think the lineup will be good enough. You know what I mean? I think, you know, there'll be times when they go quiet and don't score, runners in scoring position. You know, there'll be times that's a season. They're not going to be one of the better lineups in the game. You know, you look at Texas or New York might do, or Baltimore may do, and some of these teams, Houston, like, they're not going to have one of the better lineups in the game, but they'll be better than average, I think. You know, in the American League, I think they should be better than average. But you're right. There's still some questions. We don't know what's going on in the outfield. But one of the things that I find interesting, because I was down there for a couple of weeks, that nobody's really talking about second. And that was even before Grissom got hurt. Like, it was just handed to him. There's a little bit of a hamstring. I didn't get to see him much. I saw him take BP, and I think he's a big, strong kid. I think the bat will play. But defensively, I saw him take ground balls one day. That was actually the next day, was when he had the groin pull. And to me, it just looked uncomfortable, like at second base, you know. So it's – no one's worried about the injury of Grissom, but it's like, okay, anybody worried about him being able to handle it, like, period. Like, and I look at spring training as an extremely valuable time for a guy that's changing positions, building that foundation, getting comfortable with story. That is probably lost.
Right. Yeah, think about, you know, even if he's back by April 10th, he'll have had no real – acclimation with story to get there. You know, they're gonna have to learn on the fly how to play together.
Yeah, and like I said, I saw him for like one day taking grounders. He kind of plays tall, like plays up a little bit rather than a little low to the ground, and it was interesting because balls kind of to his left a little bit, where it's a shorter throw from to first base. He's a long arm action kind of shortstop and throws to his left. He looked really uncomfortable throwing at the first. It was like a long over the top arm action. He's kind of throwing changeups, you know, like he didn't just normal second baseman slide over and just flip it over there pretty quick. He looks like he needs to get comfortable over there, and that's the concern. He's missing valuable time.
Yeah. I talked to Ron Washington, who was the Braves infield coach or infield instructor, with being either first or third base coach there the last couple of years. He thinks the world of him, but he said pretty candidly, he needs work and they got to keep staying on him. And that was before he lost all this valuable time here in March, where he's not going to have those reps with story, not going to have the time to learn how to play second and turn that double play. Now that, you know, the shifts are over, you're back to needing a more athletic second baseman. He certainly looks athletic enough, but he doesn't have a lot of time in there at that position.
Yeah. So that's a question mark. I know Valdez is there and talk about his defense has improved. We won't know until we're 2 or 3 weeks into the game. And if he boots his first ball, it doesn't mean he sucks. He might not drop another ball for a while, but Reyes is there, should cover it. Your infield defensively. I think Graffy actually looks pretty good, but we've seen that before. He's looked good for 6 weeks, makes an error, 4 days later, makes another one, gets in his head and you look up, he's got 7, right? Haven't seen much of Casas, but the outfield defense, I think, will be better regardless of who they put in center field. But the line, it'll be interesting with that center field situation, because didn't it seem to you like that they really want Rafael to win this center field job? Like,
yeah, I think they do. And I think that probably was behind some of the Duran trade talk that we heard in January, where San Diego was trying to see if they could get something done there. We heard Duran's name a lot coming up, and it may well be because they envision Rafaela being able to emerge. And look, the guy's 5-for-15, hit a home run yesterday in Lakeland. There's little question about his athleticism and ability to cover ground in center field, but, you know, can he make better swing decisions? Can he get on base? Can he handle things offensively, or does he need more time? After the uncertainty of Duran leaving the game today with the foot flaring up, maybe that's a question that, you know, they don't even get to answer, and they have to give it to Rafaela. The guy that I think so much of this centers around in the lineup and really everything to do with the team this year and the position players is Trevor Story. We know that he's going to upgrade the infield defense. He played terrific defense for 7 weeks last year after he came back and kind of tried to do it on the fly after missing so much time with the elbow surgery. But they need him to be the Trevor Story of Colorado and not the Trevor Story of the first year and a half here. They need it to be that right-handed bat to protect Devers and Casas. And they need the production out of a guy, you know, at shortstop. Maybe a lot of teams aren't counting on their shortstop to be an offensive dynamo, but given the uncertainty of things behind the plate, second base, the outfield, Story's got to be, you know, a 25-90 guy again. And there's a lot of strikeouts early on. Maybe we're reading too much into that. He couldn't catch up last year. That seemed to be understandable. What are your thoughts on expectations on Story?
No, you're absolutely right. It's like, you know, it'd be funny if you put like a Rocky fan from 2019, 20, 21 in a room with a Red Sox fan and they talked about Trevor Story. It'd probably be two different conversations, right? Like the way we view him. He needs to be good offensively. And really, it's like fastball timing, you know, and when you start seeing him get beat with fastballs, that's when he starts cheating, gets susceptible to breaking balls down and away. And, you know, early in camp, I saw him the other day, he punched out three times, and that obviously wasn't great. But so I'm jumping a couple fastballs, so it's going to take a little bit of time. I was talking to Pete Fatsy, and he's like, he just needs at-bats. You know, he missed a lot last year as well, but he is the key to this offense. You know, whether he's hitting – if he doesn't can't hit third, if there's too much swing and miss there to hit third, not production, he's got to drop down. I don't know who jumps in. You know, do they think a guy like Tyler O'Neill can? Do they just say screw it and put Casas behind him? You know, but he is – defensively, he's a game changer. I think on the base pass, he runs well. He steals a lot. He's going to steal a lot of bags. Great athlete. But he's got to make more contact and he's got to be productive. And that's the key to this offense.
Yeah, I think he's hugely important. And as you said, you know he's going to do the job in the field. He did that kind of on the run last year, having missed the first 4.5 months. We saw what a difference he can make in the middle of that infield, but they got to get some pop out of him too, given that there are some other issues in that lineup. Let's talk about the fan base, which I know you like interacting with fans on Twitter. You're a native New Englander. You grew up here. You played for the team. Can you think of a time in your lifetime when fans were more down on the franchise than they are right now?
No, not at all. And I think a lot of that has to do with turnover of a fan base. I would say, so you're 6 years old and you see your grandfather and father crying in 2004. You know, you start becoming a fan at 7, right? Now in 2004, you know, so now you're 26 years old, you know, you're out there, you're struggling on your own. Maybe you got a girl you can't afford to go out and take her out on a date and you try to go to Fenway Park and you can't afford it. You're pissed off, especially when the team's not winning. 21-year-old kid in 04 is now 45. So this new age fan base has never really been disappointed in their teams. You know, starting in 2000, you know, with the Patriots and the run that we're on right now, like the older generation is sort of remembers when the Patriots weren't good. Remember when the Red Sox couldn't win a thing and they remember and they're just sort of like, yeah, this is like the old days. But these people, the new fans, first time experiencing and they're showing their anger, you know. So I can't remember the last time I've seen this. You know, there's a lot of people angry, disgusted, disappointed, and I understand it because quite frankly, you can wait for the kids. This is the whole bridge year, right? That Theo Epstein made famous. Like we're going to bridge contracts, you know, 2013 bridge contracts. While we wait, we are going to spend money. And then when those kids get to the big leagues, we can actually get rid of some of the overpriced guys. Cause now we got kids in the big leagues and the payroll can go down and then you supplement and that's how it works. Right. Or if you finish last place, you immediately get emotional and you go out and sign, you know, big signings, which the Red Sox historically have done. And it's just not the case. You're sort of acting like Kansas City and Pittsburgh waiting for your prospects to get good so you can spend. And that's not really what a big market or just under like large market team should be doing, whatever you want to call them.
Yep. How do you think that manifests itself this year? You know, are we really going to see a big dip in attendance? I don't think we are. because I think Fenway is its own attraction. We saw last year a lot of visiting teams packing the ballpark and traveling on weekends and making a sojourn to New England, and, you know, going to Fenway is a box they have to check. So I think the attendance is going to be okay, but I really would worry if I were trying to sell ads on Nesson this year, because if this team stumbles out of the gate because they're trying to get their feet underneath them and it starts poorly, boy, it could go downhill in a hurry. And to try to sustain that interest for a nightly investment of time for 6 months is difficult.
Yeah, and I think you know you're going to find out how big the core is, how small the core is, whatever you want to call it. Because I do think, and I think there's still some core people, Red Sox fans, love baseball, who are still disgusted and upset. But as you know, like, you know, listen, if the Bruins suck, there's still going to be people that absolutely love the Bruins that are going to watch hockey because they love hockey. They love basketball. They love football. They love baseball. So that core, those people that love the game, they'll still watch. You know, they'll still go. But you're right. Like last year, more so, and I think you're going to see it even more this year. That in the top of the first, you know, the opposing team hits a home run or scores a run, and it gets loud. And you're just sitting there going, what is going on? You know, like there are a lot of Blue Jay jerseys and Oriole jerseys and Yankee jerseys and now interleague play, whatever. So it'll still be decent crowds. You know, it won't be packed, but it's going to be a lot of opposing teams. And that was part of the whole core, right? Talking about we got to make it tougher to play here. And I think part of it, they got to play better. But at the same point, like, yeah, more and more opposing teams fans are coming out.
Yeah. So you're going to be in the booth for a lot of these games at Fenway and on the road, some with Nesson, some with WEEI. How different are those two jobs? Obviously, you know, one, you've got video, people can see what you're talking about. The other, you have to paint the picture a little bit more. Is one more challenging than the other? Do you like more one more than the other?
No, you know, I love doing games. And even like last year when things were struggling, like I showed up and if it was a good ball game, I loved it. And people are like, they suck, you know, and I'm like, I don't care. I just had a good game. You know what I mean? Like I just watched a good game. Like I'm still going to have a blast doing it because I still think there's some great players on this team. You can question whether there's enough of them. But when it comes to the two jobs, it's I think the pitch clock made it interesting because in TV, you can talk over a pitch. You can finish a story. You can talk over a pitch. You know, you kind of pause slightly and you see it's a ball and you kind of keep going. With radio, you got to stop. You know, with radio, it's like, you know, here comes the pitch. So probably less of that talking on radio with the pitch clock than maybe on TV. But you're right. Like TV, someone's in the air, do this read. Let's do the replay. You're talking to them about showing the replay on radio. You just do the game. Right. There's really none of that. So kind of going back and forth kind of makes it fun. Would I like to do one, you know, all the time? Probably, you know, but right now I just love the fact I'll do about 105, 110 games. I love it. I love traveling. I love being around the game, talking to those guys, being back in it. And I wish that they were great. And I wish September we do postseason games, but if not, I still have a really good time doing it.
And what's the breakdown of those 105, 110, Lou? How many on TV? How many on radio?
Right now it's about in that 40 to 45 range TV and like probably 65, you know, in that range of radio, something like that. So TV is about the same as it was last year. Just picked up more on the radio side. Cause I did 90 last year. I wanted to get to 105, kind of push that 110 number and see what that felt like.
Does this feel a lot different than being in a studio and doing a talk show? You know, I obviously you're a fan of all four teams. You keep up with things, but the ability to focus on the game you love, the game you played, I imagine you're happier doing this than say what you were doing 6, 8, 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, I love it. The game's over. I go back to the hotel room, get home, lie in bed and think I get to do it again. Right. And that's what I love about it. And with doing radio, as you know, when I started, what, in 08, they're looking for Red Sox people. You know, we used to do a 3-hour baseball show, right? Yep. Like there, it was baseball. And then, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, it is, we don't talk baseball. Like even your bosses are like, dude, unless something bad really happens, we're not really talking baseball. Like it has to be football 24/7. And then the Celtics got going. So the last couple of years, I couldn't even, my own show, I couldn't even squeeze baseball talk in, you know, and you start, as you know, you in 08-09, you start hiring baseball people to talk baseball because you need more of it. But as we get going, you start hiring football people and hiring basketball people. And those guys don't want to watch 162-game season. They don't know how the hell we do it. So it started just getting further and further away from the sport that I love and wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Well, people love you. You know that I think you do a terrific job both on TV and on radio. Look forward to hearing you throughout the season. The games might not be great. The team might not be great, but the broadcast will be good. And Lou, we want to thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Sean. Anytime. And tell Chris, I said, hope he gets better. You don't want him
we'll
sick.
Do.
All right.
Thanks, Lou. Want to thank Lou Merlone for joining us today. An informative Fenway rundown, as we would expect with him. And a reminder that the Red Sox Insider text program is available to you. If you have not joined, we think that you should, to be able to communicate, to get news first, to ask us questions, to supply questions for the podcast on our mailbag episodes. All you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257. Then click the link. That'll get you a free 14-day trial period and then a $4.99 charge per month. Also, some exciting news for the podcast later in the week. Pedro Martinez, the one and only, will be our guest on the Fenway Rundown on Thursday, so look out for that. Meanwhile, thanks for joining us today.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.